Hello, everyone. My name is Jared Altick, and I'm a chaplain with the police department. The Hey Chaplain podcast brings you stories and wisdom about life in law enforcement, giving support and encouragement to those who wear the badge. Today, I have with me Teresa Gallegos and Dustin Derenfelt, the vice president and president, respectively, of the Kansas chapter of Concerns of Police Survivors. Concerns of Police Survivors is an organization that provides both short-term and long-term support to the surviving family members of law enforcement officers killed in the line of duty. Teresa's brother, Saul, was a deputy with the Chelan County Sheriff's Department in Washington State. He was murdered on a traffic stop in 2003. Dustin was, and still is, an officer with Kansas City, Kansas Police Department, which had two officers, Detective Brad Lancaster and Captain Dave Melton, murdered in separate incidents, both in the summer of 2016. This episode will not be a detailed account of any of those deaths, but rather the focus today will be on the survivors, the family members and co-workers, and their stories of loss. Listen to Teresa and Dustin explain what their experience was like and how it impacted them. Notice how they used that terrible experience in a positive manner to reach out to other survivors in a way that most of us can't even begin to understand. At the end of the interview, we'll talk about how you can be involved helping the families who have survived a line of duty death. And I'll include a link to Concerns of Police Survivors in the show notes. Today's episode contains limited descriptions of traumatic experiences. Listener discretion is advised. Here's Teresa Gallegos and Dustin Derenfelt. Today I have with me Teresa and Dustin. Good to have you both here.
Thank you. Good to be here.
I'm glad that you could join me today. Teresa, tell me about what was probably one of the worst days of your life.
Not probably, but the worst day of my life.
Yeah.
Was Thursday, June 26th evening. I was painting my firstborn's room blue. I like to make things complicated, so I added a diamond, a darker blue, to his design, and I was painting his room, and the phone rang, and it was my younger sister's husband, and said, "Carla's crying. Carla's my younger sister. Did you hear about Saul?" And I said, "No." And I think I just hung up on him and called Saul. I called his, back in the day when we had home phones.
At this point, you were living in Kansas.
Topeka.
And he was in Washington State.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Lake Chelan. And I called, and the phone rang a little longer than it normally does. And my uncle, my tío Raúl, answered, which is not the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "What happened? Where's Saul?" And he paused and said, "His kindness took him from us." I screamed, and I had a cordless home phone, and I was in my bathroom, and I threw it across the wall, and it shattered.
Oh, yeah.
And I just remember screaming and screaming and crying, and the next thing you know, I don't remember anything. I just remember shivering and packing. I remember packing clothes in a suitcase, and we were going to be taking a trip to Washington, and the entire time we were traveling to get there, when I got there, I ran in his house and just ran to his closet because that's where his uniforms were.
Yeah.
And I just knelt to the ground and cried and stayed in there for hours. And hours and hours. And that's how it started.
Okay. Were most of your family able to get to Washington? I mean, that's significant distance to go from Kansas to Washington. I don't know where the rest of your family was, but were they mostly able together?
Yeah. He lived there with my sister-in-law and four boys. The youngest one was three at the time. And our other sister lived in the area. Our uncle lived in the area. But here in Kansas was, it was I, my family, my sister and her family, my brother's family, my dad, my mom preceded him in death about a year and a half before.
Okay.
What it is that at that time to get that big of a group of us on a plane was difficult.
Sure.
So, and it was around 4th of July weekend. So we ended up, all of us were in an RV. And so they drove straight through. I don't remember the drive. I don't remember anything. I just remember we left that night, like everybody packed. We got into this RV and I don't know who drove. One of my siblings, I don't know who drove. I don't know. We got there Saturday morning.
How much information did you have in those early days?
I knew nothing.
Okay.
I knew what my uncle said was that his kindness took him from us, and that's all I knew.
Right.
And that's all I just, to me, that meant that something had happened, you know, that he wasn't there. So even when I got there, I didn't believe it. He wasn't in his house until Dale. I wanted to go to the scene. I mean, I could hear people were like, you know, he was killed. I didn't know anything. And I asked, who knows? Who knows what happened? And it was Dale, who was our liaison officer. And I asked Dale to take me there where it happened. And until I saw his dry blood at the site was when I knew. And then it was on the radio because he ran the person that killed him ran and took off with his gun, and it was on America's Most Wanted, and there was a lot of media around it, so right. I knew that he was shot with his own gun and that he fought for his life and that he was a wanted person. So there was a lot of media. There was a lot of people at my brother's house wanting to know. So I knew.
What was the age difference between you and Saul?
We were 4 years apart.
Was he older?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he's the older brother?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm so sorry.
Thank you.
Dustin, tell me about 2016.
I'm a patrol officer, and I'm responding to calls for services as required, obviously, by the department. And in May, I was out on a call for service at about 65th and Tarome. It was a juvenile call for service. And at that time, I had been informed and seen a lot of news coverage saying, hey, one of our officers had been shot. Mm-hmm. At that time, we had initially thought, based on initial reports, that the officer was okay. He was harmed, but he was going to be able to make it through. And then unfortunately, by the end of my call for service, then I got a couple of phone calls saying, hey, no, he's actually passed. So I can pretty much remember everything about the day. It was a bright, sunny day. It was hot, humid Midwest environment, and you know, you have a lot of different emotions that are swirling around in your mind.
Briefly, what were the circumstances with the Detective Lancaster? How did that happen, just briefly?
Sure. So he was responding out. It was a suspicious person, and that suspicious person then turned into, unfortunately, a line of duty death, taking us between two states, both Kansas and Missouri, committing multiple other crimes. So not only had he shot Detective Lancaster at that time, but he had also committed another carjacking, had kidnapped some children, had shot at another officer over in KCMO. So committed multiple other felonious crimes.
Yeah.
And then a couple of months later, I was at home. I was doing laundry, day off from work, just doing the normal routine, you know, going and getting groceries, doing laundry, taking my son from here, point A to point B, you know, and then get another phone call.
This is literally just like 2 months later.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. From May to July. And it's one of my personal friends. And at that time he says, it's happened again. And I said, what are you talking about? What's happened again? You know, in this line of work, you never know what that is. So at that time, then I was informed that, that one of our other officers, Captain Melton, had been shot and killed in an incident. So in that one, again, I can tell you where I was in the house, what I was doing, how it was outside, because it's just imprinted. It's imprinted on your mind. He was the type of guy, Captain Melton, and this was indicative of him being brought up in the military, being just a leader in general. He was a captain and not required to respond to calls for service of any nature, because he's overseeing all of those folks that do. But on that day, at that time, he decided that he was going to go out, and there was a shots fired call down in one of our apartment complexes to the north of our city. And at about 22nd Haskell in Kansas City, Kansas, that's unfortunately where he met his fate.
Tell me about your background with each of them. How big a department do you work in?
So we've got about 350, 375 officers total, and that's with certified officers. So a fairly small department, really. And, you know, because of that, based off of that, you do develop a lot of relationships with the folks that you work with. And with Detective Lancaster, I was initially made contact with him when I was in training, and he was on midnights, and then I was in training and I was on the afternoon. So he would always come in after, and you know, there's that banter back and forth, just like anybody. And, yeah. You know, and then he was then promoted to detective. And then one of my last cases, with him, he was actually the assigned detective, and it was a felonious case between, again, Kansas and Missouri, and he was the one that was assigned, and we're also part of the honor guard. So in this, understanding that not only are we working together, but we provide line of duty death services for families. And not just that, just funeral preparation and then the good times as well. So we go out to, you know, different events and provide those services. But that's my connection with Detective Lancaster. And then with Captain Melton, it's a little bit more, even more personal, because again, he was a member of the Honor Guard. I was a member of the Honor Guard. I actually got into my first foot pursuit. Sorry, tongue twister there. But with him when he was a sergeant in East Patrol while I was on training. And I remember that day like no other. You come, you work, you build those relationships, and you never would think that anything like that would happen. Although it's in the back of your mind that it could, it's never that experience. It's always something that you think is so far away.
Yeah. Yeah. How did it change you to lose two coworkers in such a short span? What impact do you feel like that had on you personally?
You know, it really impacted me in the way that I police, and it also impacted me in the way that in my personal life and how I look at just life in general. And my perception of life changed. And I said, you know, when you're new and you're coming into being a police officer, you always want to, you're gung-ho, you want to go out, you want to be aggressive, you want to, you know, you want to change the world, you want to serve your community. That's great. And then you work overtime, you're at work, you go to court on your days off, you know, things of that nature. And you really have to take a step back when an event like this happens and make important what is important. And make that time with your family important, because it's nothing is ever guaranteed. And you know, even something as simple as how I police, how I roll up on a call, when I take my seatbelt off in the car, you know, it's just all of those things. Your perception of life changes. So it's both personal and professional that it really impacted me.
It's interesting. Police officers very seldom do anything to their personal vehicles to identify them as police. With fire department, you know, they all get the fire department,
sure,
you know, license plates.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell, you know, this person in traffic is a firefighter.
Mm-hmm.
Police officers rarely, if ever, do that. With the exception mm-hmm. of these two line of duty deaths, there are stickers that mm-hmm. were passed out. People could get these stickers, the blue ribbon stickers for each of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen those on more personal vehicles than I think I've ever seen anything identifying somebody as connected to law enforcement.
Sure.
It was very impactful
mm-hmm.
To have those losses, to have them and to have them so close together. That was pretty formative. So let me ask both of you. You're both involved with an organization called COPS, Concerns of Police Survivors. Tell me, how did you, Teresa, get involved with that group, and what led you to move from the place where you're a grieving family member to where you're now wanting to reach out and help other grieving family members?
Mm-hmm. So I learned of Concerns of Police Survivors firsthand. Because I learned of Washington Concerns of Police Survivors during the process of my brother's funeral.
The state chapter. Reached out to
yes.
you.
Yeah. Yeah. So I knew of them. And then, you know, after the funeral and after everyone leaves, then I was in a different state. I came back to Topeka, and I was in a place of mourning and grieving, and I didn't want anything that connected me to anything that had to do with the funeral or anything like that. And so I took some time to work on myself, to work on my my pain, my suffering,
sure.
To go through all of that. So I disengaged from a lot, and I disengaged from knowing that Kansas Concerns of Police Survivors existed. And I didn't feel that I was ready for any of that until, I can't honestly sit here and tell you that I know exactly the moment, but somehow in approximately about 6 years ago, I was invited to attend a meeting at the Topeka Police Department. It was the Kansas Concerns of Police Survivors meeting, and I just thought, I'm just going to try it. I'm just going to see. I was just in a really good place. And I went to the meeting, and I saw Joe Bolander, who is the father, the parent of a fallen officer. And I remember looking at him, and I thought about my dad, and I really connected with him. I don't know if he connected with me, but he holds a special place in my heart. And then I listened, and I saw I saw other survivors there, and I saw there was a guest there, partner there, and I saw him being there, and I knew that I was in the right place in the right time, and that I was in a place where I could help others and shepherd others come along to where I was.
Okay. Here, 6 years later, now, what's your role with COPS?
So currently, I am the vice president, and I also chair the golf tournament that's around the corner. So those are my official positions. But I liaison when we have family members that are going to Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
I'm there to walk alongside them, with them. I've been through that process at National Police Week, so I am there with survivors to provide them information, provide them support. I'm there with them alongside them, but I'm also there to take a step back.
Right.
And to be there when they want me to be there, and walk away when they need some alone time.
Right. Are there several people involved with Concerns of Police Survivors who took several years or had a gap of several years between the time that they lost somebody and the time they actually actively started helping others? It seems like that would be pretty natural for there to be a gap there. Do you think that you find that to be common?
I believe so. I'm going to look to Dustin to think of, you know, what our membership looks like. But I don't know about the past before I came along with those survivors, how they became involved. I don't know those stories as well.
Yeah.
But I think it's common.
Yeah. Everybody's different, and it's not unusual to need some time between our grief process and when we begin to be useful helpers. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a pretty common thing. However, Dustin, you actually had opportunity to get involved fairly quick after your losses. Can you tell me how did you get started with COPS?
Yeah, so I really did. So we had our two line of duty incidences in May and July, and then my family and I were over in Kansas City, Missouri at a city event, and it was geared towards military and honoring military veterans and things of that nature, and over at the Liberty Memorial. And there was one moment that kind of caught me, and it was when TAPS was sounded during the event. And obviously, it's brought back a lot of emotions. And because I sounded TAPS for both Detective Lancaster and for Captain Melton and for other line of duties as well. So I think I kind of making a connection at that point. And then all of a sudden, went back to work, and one of our board members had sent out a statewide email requesting if anybody wanted to get involved. And so at that point, I said, "Yeah, I want to step up, and I want to be involved in this organization because I think it's truly a help and a service for other people going through this."
In the first few days after someone loses a loved one in the line of duty, there's a lot of shock, and it can just be foggy and a little bit bewildering. How, as a good helper, how can you come alongside them, and what do you do in those first few days for somebody who has survived the loss of a loved one?
I'll try to answer this.
Sure.
I would say what you can do is not ask what they need from you. What I do is do. I don't ask. I remember I read a book, one of my favorite books about grief. It's called Option B. And they talk about just doing, not asking, can I get you a meal? Just showing up at the front door, leaving it there and texting and saying, I know your favorite place is Freddy's, and just leaving it there. Because people are not going, they're in such a fog, and there's so many things, they don't remember things. Things like buying toiletries and just leaving, toilet paper, paper towels, those things. Just leaving them at their door. Just the things that we normally do that don't get done because you are in a fog, doing those things for them. And if you are with them, if you're next to them, just sit. Sit in silence.
Yeah.
Don't ask questions.
Yeah.
Don't give anyone any... At that moment, don't give them books. Don't give them information. Don't give them brochures. And in my opinion, the worst thing you can say is, "Time heals everything." Don't say time heals everything, and don't say, "God only gives you what you can handle." Yeah. Those are a couple of the quick things that come to mind. So
yeah. Yeah, let them grieve. Let them go through that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Dustin, how does that change then as weeks go by? How does that help and support evolve?
You know, with a line of duty death, as compared to a lot of other death processes or grief in general, line of duties oftentimes are very traumatic. They're sudden. They're unexpected, and so. We'll have a mass media frenzy. We'll have departments that will come in. Everybody wants to pitch in. Organizations will come and say, "Hey, we're here." And then when the dust settles, that's when a lot of those things start to go away. Or we even lose the memory through, say, the department. We've got new members that have come on and that didn't experience that same trauma that you did, that same experience that you had. So as time goes, I think that's where Kansas Cops really steps in, because we're here for the short and the long term. Mm-hmm. So we're here to provide those services. We're here to provide the counseling, the scholarship opportunities, taking care of your family in the middle of the night, at midnight, if you need somebody to talk to, we're here for you. If this is your first time going out to Washington, D.C., because you've needed a couple of years, we're there to help you and walk through that process, walk through the trauma and the grief process. So although I think it's very important for a person or a family, an individual, to be able to identify their grief, to understand their grief, I think it's just as important to also for them to be able to take a step back and really just take account for their own emotions. And not let somebody else dictate their emotions, or let themselves experience those emotions. Because sometimes also what we see are families, and especially moms, will have smaller kids, have family, have family that have come over to stay with them. And so they're taking care of that experience, but they're also taking care of everyone else. So then they're not able to grieve. So it's taking that time and being able to do that over the long term, that's where Kansas Cops really helps out.
Yeah. With a line of duty death, the individual passed away. They died doing this specific job. It's a job that is dangerous. It's a job that has a certain amount of risk that's accepted. But a lot of times the individual who accepted it, they're the ones who are now gone. And the family that didn't swear an oath, didn't you know, pin on a badge, they now also deal with the consequences. And one of the parts of grief is anger. Mm-hmm. And there's sometimes resentment toward law enforcement because law enforcement took away my loved one. What response do you have to somebody who is angry? They don't want law enforcement to come help them. They don't want to see a badge. What kind of help or support would you offer in that case, or what word of wisdom do you have?
That's the great thing about Kansas Cops, Kansas Concerns of Police Survivors, is that we have parents, we have coworkers, we have siblings. And so that's where we can kind of recognize that if it's a sibling, instead of having Dustin responding to that or connecting with that family, then that's a place where he can call me, and I don't trigger,
right?
Because I come in as a sibling versus a law enforcement.
Yeah, yeah. You have the civilian look and understanding. You're not someone coming in. Because frankly, law enforcement, sometimes it's hard, even when you're not in uniform. Dustin, no offense, but I can spot you from a mile away that you're law enforcement.
Right.
And so you have members of the organization that are not themselves in uniform personnel. So you can kind of do that. Is that something you know in advance?
So I think it's just being able to recognize the trauma that's occurred, mm-hmm. And as an organization or even as a department, because departments are very good at providing support, but we're also, for lack of a better term, maybe very type A personalities. So we want to go in, we want to get it done, we want to accomplish a goal,
solve problems,
fix things, get things solved, but without the understanding sometimes that trauma is certainly not like that. And trauma can be experienced lifelong. You can experience a smell, and 10 years later, you know, that experience, you're all of a sudden back in the middle of my living room while I'm folding laundry and preparing for my next day of work, you know, or you're at a ceremony, you're hearing taps and you're experiencing that. So it's entirely different. So I think, again, where Kansas Cops really does a good job is being able to recognize that trauma and then being able to pair the family with a like-minded individual or having a like experience. So if it's a grieving mother, then we have other grieving mothers that can speak from that experience. If it is a department, then that's where law enforcement would come in. Or if it's a sister, a sibling, a child, whatever. And then, like I said, we couple that with long-term care. So then we have retreats where a person goes and experiences and talks about those events and bonds over what's good and also sometimes what hasn't been so positive about that experience. Yeah. And so they can share that. And a lot of folks have a lot of healing that goes on after that. And after the department sometimes goes away.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, as I understand it, to be a member of Concerns of Police Survivors, you have to be a direct relative or coworker of someone who's died in the line of duty. Is that correct?
Yes. So that is correct. You either need to be a surviving coworker or family member.
Okay.
And family member obviously has a lot of different definitions.
Sure. Sure. So if somebody is listening to this and they would qualify, they're in that category, and maybe it's been several years, maybe it's been more recent, but what should they do if they want to dip their toe in the water and maybe think about helping? How would they go about that?
Maybe there are people out there that didn't realize that or didn't identify as an impacted coworker.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it's someone that's a distant relative of someone that was, you know, killed in the line of duty. Maybe it's someone that maybe isn't a place to help, but maybe just wants a conversation, is in the place where maybe they want to tiptoe in that connection. So they can definitely look at our website, which is kansascops.org. Social media. I'm looking at Dustin. I'm not the social media person. We're on Facebook.
I'll put whatever links you want in the
show notes. Yes, all the links, all of that. So that's the quickest way to connect with us on our website, our emails and phone numbers on social media.
Okay.
That's a great place to start.
And if somebody's listening to this and they're not really in that category, but they're sympathetic and mm-hmm. would like to help you do what you do, how can they support you?
So we've got a lot of different ways of support. Obviously, you can go online and there's a donate button, so you can donate to our cause. And again, we are a 501c3 nonprofit organization, which means that all the money that's raised goes back directly to support those in the state of Kansas that have been affected by a line of duty. So certainly they can support in that manner. And it doesn't matter. Somebody's $5 may be just as important and just as impactful as somebody's $1,000, $5,000 donation.
Yeah.
So we want to accept and appreciate everyone for the point at which they're at in life. So that's one way, of course. But you can also get involved or do something as simple as you want to support law enforcement or you support survivors. So you see somebody going by or you see even an officer and you just say thank you. Or you go to something like the Officer Memorial in Topeka, generally in May, and you know you talk to some of our survivors that are there, some of the family members that are there. So you can support in that way as well.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you both for coming and talking about this, and thank you also for taking your pain, the trauma that you've been through, and turning it into something beautiful to help other people. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Talking about our losses can be an emotionally exhausting experience, but I'm thankful for Dustin and Teresa's willingness to share so that others can find support and healing. If you've suffered a loss like this, you need to talk to someone you can trust. You need to know that you're not alone and that your life going forward still has value and meaning. You need to believe that there are people who can truly understand and can help you rebuild the shattered pieces of your life. The book that Teresa mentioned is Option B by Sheryl Sandberg. It's about facing life after losing a loved one. You can find that book in the show notes of this episode. And if you're not directly impacted by this, you can still help.
Please show your support to Concerns of Police Survivors and to the annual memorial services in your local area that commemorate line of duty deaths. They happen every year in every state, usually in May. You could volunteer to serve food or stack chairs or just donate money. All you have to do is reach out and be willing to work for the good of others. If you like what you heard here, please share this episode with a cop or someone who loves a cop. On the next episode of Hey Chaplain.
If we get called out to a barricaded subject or a SWAT call out or whatever, whoever will call me, whoever's in command will call me and say, we need soup, ladies. We've got 120 people here. And I say, okay, got it covered. So I get pots of soup going and we try to be out the door within 1 hour with food for 100 or more people.
Wow. The views expressed here are the personal views of the hosts and our guests and do not necessarily represent the views of any law enforcement agency or its components. Thank you for listening today. And as always, pray for peace in our city.